Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Moana.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Live with Barney.
If everyone was doing a great job, then everyone would win the championship every week.
Geeter.
It's not kittens and candles all the time, guys.
Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
We
know
running
DJ a small
Ruscha.
Business keeps you busy, so take
lane.
A break.
Go
in,
click on the banner, and sign
right
up
now.
For Constant Contact email marketing. You'll get a $50 restaurant certificate with enrollment. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, wow.
Welcome into the Net Live. Jeez. Apparently we're running commercials during our intro now. Jeez, yeah. Can we get it right here, DJ Ruscha, or what?
No idea what happened.
Is it you clicking on a window? DVB info or something? Some sort of volleyball website?
Who knows what I did?
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Net Live. Sorry we're getting started a little bit late. It's been kind of hectic out here in California with all of our hosts and co-hosts. A lot of people here and not here. So glad you hung in with us. And if you're getting this via podcast, you'll get the cleaned up version. So we're in studio, myself, Kevin Barnett, sitting with DJ Ruscha. Chris Geeter McGee going to be on the line, expecting a call from him, report about the Corona Wide Open that happened this past week in Siesta Key, Florida. He was down there live doing his Geeter thing. I imagine he felt pretty good about that, don't you, Jeremy, getting back to his roots, what he's been sad he hasn't been doing or not?
I would like to have been there after his first introduction for a player. Like, did it just was like riding a bike?
Was he all sweaty before?
Yeah. Did he miss me? I mean, all kinds of things.
Did he miss you? I like how that question number two.
Obviously.
Well, we've got a good show planned for you today. We have World League, the Brazil edition. We'll give you the results from that anyway. Everybody out there knows I don't watch. But we had some reaction from the previous week, which now I've seen, the Puerto Rico matches, which have been out there on Universal Sports. FIVB, Beijing Grand Slam. Men and women were both in action. And there was a lot to report, some crazy stuff going on both sides. The women's national team in action in Montreux, kind of a half roster. It seemed to me like a training opportunity out there with head coach Karch Karai, in this case, Hugh McCutcheon, staying back to train some of the other troops and present in preparation for the Pan American Cup. So the Montreux report will be. And then we have David Portney from the AVCA. He's in-house. He's checking it out. We've been communicating with him about a lot of different things. And he's here to present us with our major award.
The award-winning.
Award-winning Net Live. Grant Berger Award.
Have we figured out how we're going to say that yet?
I'm hoping he brought us a leg lamp. Like Christmas Story.
Fragile?
Yeah, Fragile. I'm hoping it's something like that. So I can just say it's a major award.
It's awesome.
So we'll talk to David. We have guest Brittany Hochevar coming on. Hochevar? How do I say it right?
You know, I was having that conversation with myself in the car.
We have to have this conversation with her.
I've had this conversation with her. And I still don't know how to say her last name. But I understand because people have no idea how to say my last name either, so it's okay.
Brittany is a player. She followed Misty May into Long Beach State University as a setter. Had a great career there, then moved on, was on the national team for a short period of time right towards the end of my career, and now has been on the beach for quite a number of seasons, had a lot of success, and played. As a matter of fact, instead of Misty May, as she was hurt, Brittany had a chance to play with Carrie Walsh in a tournament in Poland, and now she's back with her regular partner, and we're going to talk to her. She was at Corona Wide Open this past week, took down that tournament.
Yeah, big win.
Big win.
Look forward to hearing more about it.
I thought the Corona Wide Open, we touched on it last week, there was a bounty put out there by Karch. Interesting idea.
I know, I thought about entering just so I could get that.
Just so you could have a shot at it?
Yes, just to see what would happen.
It was $10,000 to anyone that picked off the number one seeds, and it was $5,000 to the number one seeds if they went undefeated all the way through. Now, we're going to hear from Geeter, I think, because since I looked on Corona's website yesterday, couldn't find any results. So we're going to have to talk to Geeter about what actually went down.
He did text me and said he's calling in momentarily.
Momentarily. Well, I think we may have him.
Excellent.
Right here. Geeter, are you there?
Yeah, you guys hear me?
Yeah, nice.
Okay, how are we doing?
Are you live from Dodger Stadium right now?
No, not yet. I'm actually sitting at my computer. I just put you guys on. I'm going to do a little prep, and then I got to get out there.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, we're sorry to lose you to the Dodgers, but we're glad you're still making a living.
Someone's got to work, right?
That's right. That's right. So, Geeter, we were just talking about Corona Light Wide Open and wondering about the results. We were wondering about how the scene was. Did you sweat a lot before your first intro? Were you nervous? And, of course, the second question was, did you miss Jeremy?
Yeah, I missed Jeremy a lot. It was definitely weird walking onto a stage and not having him there. They do have another announcer. He's a 27-year-old kid from Colorado, and he's in the skiing world. And he's been announcing for 2 years. His name's Luke Van Valen. So I shared the mic with him. Really, really funny kid. Did a real nice job. So I was kind of tag teaming it with him. A guy named DJ Shares. He's from Colorado. Those two are friends. And he was the DJ. They had a little stage set up. You know, there's no bleachers. They had a ton of courts because there was a lot of teams playing. They had open division. I think there's 43 men, 35 women. And then, you know, they had novice and A and B and co-ed. And so there was tons of teams there. Beautiful beach yesterday. I'd never been there. White Sands, voted number one beach in America. That was kind of cool to be in a place like that. Didn't get a lot of walk-through traffic crowd, I didn't think. It had its moments, you know, midday Saturday and Sunday when it definitely had some nice people there. They did some really good things. You know, this guy Kelly James, who's a great musician, performed on Saturday on the stage, and that was really cool. You know, they had player parties set up, and people were really into it. They definitely have created a really cool vibe. As for the volleyball, I was getting a lot of tweets throughout the weekend just about where are the results, and I heard you talking about that party that you were looking for them and couldn't find them anywhere. So yeah. I was trying to tweet them as much as I could, you know, during the day and especially on Sunday. You know, it's different than the AVP. You know, it's like we always kind of knew what was going on and who was playing where, and people could track it all day long on the website and all that stuff. So I think that's something that I definitely want to talk to Billy and Steve about is how to do a better job of getting that out, because people wanted to know whether it's BVB info, whether it's on the Corona Light Wide Open website. I think that's, you know, important for the volleyball fans that are out there that can't get to events to know how the volleyball was going. So I definitely think that that's an area. Sorry, Kevin, go on.
Even just the end of the tournament, can we get a recap of what happened at the tournament? Even if you're not going to do it live, fine. I understand some of the limitations there, but at least get us a thing at the end that says, here's who won first through 10. And I don't know, maybe you were doing it on Facebook and I didn't find it, but it at least was not on their own site. And the way you describe it and the lack of results and that kind of stuff, it makes me wonder, is this an amateur thing or a pro thing, or do they not know really what it is? I mean, if you have the A and the B and you have the pros and you have all those different people there, I can see that being kind of a cool scene. But I just wonder, is this a pro deal or an amateur deal?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, and you know, I think they would tell you that they want it to be considered a pro deal. I think, you know, Brian Lewis is back involved, and you know, he talked to the players beforehand from the stage, and I think for him, he was like, listen, this is a home for you guys. We're here if you need us. We're providing some events, and we're gonna have a good time, and there's a little bit of money in it, and you know, let's build this. Let's build the brand back up. You know, I think that was a good message that Louis got out there, because, you know, bottom line, Barney, there are not a lot of opportunities. You know, Albert's doing the best he can with the NVL, and I talked to some players about the NVL, and they really love the Preakness and, you know, the great move by Albert, I think, to go to that event first, you know, kick it off somewhere where there's going to be a lot of people and you know, a built-in event that the women had already gone there for a few years, you know. So, you know, I think both entities are really trying to provide some opportunity for these players. There's not going to be, you know, $250,000 prize money purses right now. It's just not going to happen at this moment, this season. Not to say it won't happen next year, but, you know, all these guys have done a pretty good job, a really good job, actually, of you know, trying to build their brand and making opportunities for people. You know, we have to realize that. The part that's really tough, Kevin and Jay Roche, is that, you know, if you go out there and you're groveling and you get a ninth, you know, you're not coming home with any money. You know, it's a lot of work, and it's hot, and there's, you know, those guys are working their asses off out there. I mean, it was blistering, and a lot of matches. And, you know, you got to realize that there's not a ton of money out there. So if you can, you know, play for the love of the game and to try to make some money and then, you know, and weather this storm, then I think we can survive. But I think that's going to be the difficult thing, to be real honest with you. But I think to answer your question, Corona definitely wants to be, you know, it to be a pro event. But they like having that other they like having a home for other volleyball people as well, because there's so many people that play the sport.
I like their video, and looking on their website, they have their promo video. It's been up there for a long time. I think they did a great job with it. It has a cool vibe to it. You get a sense of the party atmosphere of it all, and and not only the volleyball, but just the whole scene that I think they're really striving for and looking to achieve. And I know there are some people out there in the volleyball world who don't feel like it should be that much of a party thing, where it's kind of a hybrid between AVP and perhaps...
Sure.
You know, the players are serious. The players aren't drinking a lot, but certainly the surrounding people are encouraged to make it a party and drink and have a great time. And you wonder I just wonder where some of that lands between professional and kind of an amateur, show or an amateur mess on the side of the court. And I've heard both ways about some of their events last year, that it was either over the top and too much, or it was pretty good and it was a fun scene.
Yeah, you know, I would, and I've only been to this one, so I would categorize it as a fun scene. I didn't see that other part, but I know what you're talking about. You know, there was some talk about that last year surrounding a couple of events, but I think you're right in finding that cross between what Corona's going for and what the AVP went for, and combining that professionalism and top-level play with, you know, the vibe of it all and the lifestyle of it all. And I think, you know, that's where the sport needs to go right now, and I think that's what they're trying to do.
Now, you mentioned the crowd, and it wasn't that great, or it was just the players who were cheering and you felt like the walk-by really wasn't there?
Well, you know, I've been trying to think about this since I was flying home last night and I knew I'd be coming on the show to talk to you guys. I just, you know, it's a different feel because I'm used to gauging AVP crowds, because you have your center court and then you have the outside courts, and with this it's just a ton of courts everywhere and there's lots of people all over the place. You know, center court, you know, as the tournament goes on, you start to get people around the court, and that's where you go, oh, this is cool, there's some people here. I couldn't really tell, Barney, like, who was just there as fans. You know, I mean, you had your people that were posted up that were there for 2 days, but in terms of like who was walking around the tournament, you know, who was playing in it, who was watching their friends, or who was just coming by, it was really tough and difficult for me to be able to gauge that part.
That's what I wonder with the sport of beach volleyball. Are we at a point now where really you have to be piggybacked somewhere? Because we talked about the NVL and their Baltimore event and their Baltimore Beach, and the reports I heard were that there were a couple hundred people maybe that bothered to be at the Baltimore Beach side. But then once you took it to the Preakness, it was very well received at the Preakness. And so it seems like that beach volleyball at this point in the United States is not a standalone attraction. Seems like it has to be sort of a sideshow to some other bigger attraction that's bringing in the numbers that then beach volleyball can kind of utilize.
You know, I don't know. I mean, you go to I think you might have come by the Hermosa Open last year. Thousands and thousands of people. Jeremy ran a Cincinnati event just 2 years ago. We had 8,000 people at the final. I mean, Chicago every year completely sold out. So I agree with you, but I still think there are those markets that are, you know, where you can stand alone, as you put it.
So maybe there aren't quite as many of those markets left as we were used to in years past, but there still are a few when you talk about Chicago, Cincinnati, and of course the West Coast here.
Yeah, and you know, I think social media has got to play a big part of our sport right now, and for people to finding out things, and I don't think the marketing dollars are there. You know, and where do you put your marketing dollars when you do have it? How do you let people know where we're going to be if you're not doing TV commercials or radio spots or print media? Because, you know, not a lot of people aren't reading print media anymore. So are you using Facebook? Are you using Twitter? You know, how are you going to market your tour? I think that's going to be another big thing, Barney. Like, you know, when you come into town, when we used to go into town, Jay Roche and I, we could pretty much tell you how many people we thought were going to be there because we knew how much love we were getting or not getting. You knew how much in the media, the papers were covering it or they weren't covering it. You know, the markets that did the best job of it always had the greatest crowds. You know, so I think both tours and or whatever tours pop up, you know, have to figure out how are you going to market this tour. Because the pure volleyball people and the people that listen to our show and the people that come to events and people that get on the message boards, you know, they follow it closely. They know the game. They know the players. They have friends that actually play on the tour. So they're kind of dialed in as to where it's going to go and where things are happening. You know what I mean? It's that other person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a casual fan that you're looking to draw on or perhaps draw new people into the sport. It's a weird puzzle, and I think we're definitely, as we've talked about on the show, I think it's 3 years. We're going to wait and see who can sort it out, who can do it best, who can make those marketing choices that you just covered, Geeter, and what works best to really get people to start coming through the gates and being a part of the tours on their own. But let's look at a tour that has been successful, continues to be successful, started making money, and has a couple of great events like a Klagenfurt or the World Championships, which are going to be in Rome next week. And it was FIVB, the Federation of International Volleyball, their beach tour, extremely healthy, putting out major prize money. And they were in Beijing this past week, and both on the women's and men's side, there was some exciting stuff. Let's start with the women's side, Geeter.
Yeah, I think for Carrie Walsh and Misty May to come out, you know, after the injury and their first tournament back together and make it a Grand Slam in Beijing, where almost 3 years ago to the day they won a gold medal, just a couple months shy of 3 years exactly. That had to have been pretty special. I had some tweets out and some texts out to them to congratulate them. I'd love to actually talk to them and just get a sense of what that feeling was like. I saw a couple of complete battles that they had too against Jen and April. But I think for them to come in, you know, and yeah, I got to be honest, guys, there's some skepticism on my end in terms of Misty's injury and when she would be able to come back strong. You know, you get back in the sand, and you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show, Barney. You know, I talked to Marcio a lot, their coach, because he and I coach club together. And all along through the thing, you know, every other time I'd see him, I'd be like, so how's Misty? And towards the end, he was like, well, one time he looked at me, he's like, gosh, she looked really good today. He's like, you know, she's getting in shape. She's, you know, you can tell she's leaned out. He's like, she's so strong. And I was like, wow. And, you know, Wakfola's mom works with her as well, and she was kind of giving me the same kind of report. So I started thinking to myself, she might just be, you know, she is that special, man. She can get it going when she wants to get it going. And apparently, you know, for them to come out and lose their first match in pool play just shows, you know, whether it's nerves or for the pressure or getting used to playing again and then to go undefeated the rest of the way. What a special tournament for them.
Absolutely. So the Golden Girls do it, and they defeated a team in the finals, the Germans, that had gone through the number one and the number two seed on their way there. And I think you mentioned it that Carrie and Misty lost their first match in pool play, but then won six straight to go ahead and take it. It's got to be just a huge confidence boost because of all the unknowns. You talked about the injury, but also getting back together. I mean, they have an expectation of how good they're going to be, but of course you never know. Misty coming off the Achilles, Carrie coming off two kids and having played intermittently in the last 2.5 years. Really, really a unique thing, and they put it together. Now the key will be, can they sustain that? You know, sometimes you come back and you have that kind of short burst, you feel great, and then you kind of get mired into the season and the grind, and I'm going to be very interested to see how they do, if this is just galvanize their confidence again and perhaps put the rest of the world back a step where they start to worry about, oh, no, here we go. They're right back where they were and we're in trouble. Or is this one great performance and they're going to continue to battle through tournaments?
Well, it's, you know, you hit on a couple great points there, and let's really think about who these two women are. I mean, these guys win, and they win 90% of the time. So for, you know, Carrie to come back after being pregnant a couple times and not get victories, you know, as she did with Nicole a couple times overseas, but playing with Rachel, they got close but didn't win. She played with Brooke, didn't win. Played with Brittany overseas, got a seventh. All while coming back in that whole journey and starting that process, Misty comes back with Nicole, wins a few tournaments, but also ends up on the losing end a lot of times. You know, for them to come back, go to Brazil, get a second, then they get injured. You know, this must have been a great feeling for Misty and Carrie. Number one, it just shows the rest of the world they are right where they need to be. But one thing I also noticed when I look at games and who's playing them and who's playing them tough, and you mentioned this German team, the world's getting better. And this is what's going to be fun about London. It's not just Carrie, Misty, and then everybody else who's playing for the silver. There's going to be a bunch of teams playing for gold. And, you know, Carrie and Misty are going to be one of them. And that's exciting to me.
I think it's better than just them dominating. I think it's exciting that you come in and it's the NFL story. You know, the baseball has the Yankees and they were dominating for a long time, and you'd see that in other sports where you have a dominant force for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and everybody talks about the dynasty being an attraction, but I think it's less of an attraction than parity. And I think the NFL has proven that the parity is exciting. People don't know what's going to happen. They're interested to see what's going to happen. Anytime you know, or you think you know the results, I think there's a little less interest. But when you have 2 or 3 or 4 good teams that have an opportunity to take it, I think then you're looking up the results. You're watching matches. You're going, man, I wonder what's going to happen this week. Who's going to put it together? I think that's a better tour.
Well, I remember when I joined the show, Barney, you asked me that. I remember you saying to me, is this a good thing? And I remember my answer at the time was, you know, we all know this team. This is America's team. And it was pretty awesome to watch this run when they were going undefeated and all that kind of stuff. And I think that was great for the game at the time. But I completely agree with you that this time out, it's way more exciting. It's way more riveting, especially where our sport is. Maybe it's going to get people to follow them, and they're going to have the ups and downs. They're not going to win every single tournament. And I think that's awesome, because it's also going to drive them, and it's going to make this third gold medal, which they're going to have a good chance to ultimately win. There's it's going to make it even that much more special, guys.
There's the prediction right there. Geeter, you showed your hand a little bit.
Believe me, they're going to be one of a few, you know, few teams that are going to have a chance at a gold medal. You'd be crazy to say that they don't have a chance to win a gold medal. I mean, they are definitely going to be a favorite going into London. There's not even a question about it. Sybil, Julianne, and Larissa, Janet, April will have a chance if they make it. You know, there's a few teams that will have a chance to win.
I think it's a little early. Yes, if they play like this past weekend, of course. I absolutely agree with you. But I wonder what's going to happen. And, of course, we have beach trials coming up. So they could not even go. They could get completely hosed out and not end up at the Olympic
Kevin,
game. What then?
Kevin, they're going. Yeah. Kevin, they're going.
With trials. I mean,
barring injury.
There's been all this panic about trials. Oh, my God, trials. And so they may not even go. They may just fail.
God,
they
just may, so like, good for you first. Just stop drubbing up the negative over there.
Wow.
No,
hey,
by the way,
real quick, Barney, because I know I looked at the chat room and it looked like someone was asking about the men's side of Corona. I didn't know if you guys talked about it already, but Sean Scott and John Hyden won in the one. They went undefeated. They didn't even have a final, actually, because Kevin McCullough had a full body cramp. Matt Olson's partner. They made it to the finals, but were unable to play it. So Sean and John did have one really interesting match and close match. They had to fight off 3 match points against Fred and Rodrigo. And Rodrigo and Fred were on the good side, bombing that serve in howling wind on Saturday for the $5,000. And one time Hyden passed the perfect ball inside out, and the other time Sean got a touch off the block inside it out. So they definitely had their backs up against the wall with that bounty.
What did they do for the final then? Did they have an exhibition or anything, or was that just it?
That's a good question, buddy. I was on a plane. I had to leave before the win. The day got so pushed back, and the games were going long that I had to catch my flight. So I left right before Brittany won her final.
All right. That's a good recap on the Corona Light Wide Open. I like that. Geeter, can you hang around and talk to Brittany right after the break?
Yeah, I can. I can have you guys on, and I'll stay on, and I'll just hop off when I got to go.
Sweet. Well, we're going to take a short 2-minute break here. Get things going. You're listening to NetLive here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Thanks for being here a little bit late today. Next up, we have Brittany Hochevar coming on. And we're going to learn how to pronounce her last name. Hochevar?
Hopefully she knows how to pronounce it.
She's going to give us...
Hochevar. Hochevar.
Hochevar. There we go. I should know that. But she's coming up next. We're going to talk to her. And much more still to come on the NetLive. DJ Roche, I missed you last week, man.
I know.
I missed you. I played some same old boring tunes. People were complaining. It's good to have you back. Barnett Roche in studio, NetLive, right back. You know what it is. You know this one, right? Well, maybe not forever. Chin withdraw, we not together. Best foot forward, holla at the board. And I can get them all without lots of effort. Take her home, we can get it on. And make my jollof with a lot of pepper. God has blessed her, pride has dressed her. Mix my Guinness with a Dr. Pepper. I'm so nauseous, she's so Ebo. She's so sweet, shawty, feed my ego. Me, Bo, Blue, Bola, Depot, O, Lou, Ho, Crew, Ro, Do. Got more green than Ho. African queen got what you need. Say my name Wale. Bow on me. Yeah. We about to take
level up. The guy feel like a Nigerian party. Yeah, if she's sweating, and you got some money in your hand, you got spray it. Like money on the floor, spray it, spray it. It's money on the floor, spray it, spray it. 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 Money on the floor.
The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Welcome back. Appreciate you being here. Hey, if you want to connect with us during the week, email us, thenetlive@gmail.com. I know a lot of people out there have been sending us notes. We enjoy reading your opinions, good, bad, indifferent, stuff you want to hear about, topics that we have or perhaps have not covered here on the program. We also have our Facebook page, facebook.com/thenetlive. We put questions up there during the week when we're not super busy and out of town, and you guys can post all kinds of stuff up there, videos and links and other stories about volleyball. We've appreciated everything that you guys have put up there. And if you're not a fan already, get on there and like us so you can keep in touch with us all during the week. And then don't forget about iTunes. I know a lot of people get this via iTunes. Podcast is up about anywhere from a few hours to one day, within 24 hours, of course, up there on iTunes for download for free. Get your subscription there and you can take us with you anywhere you go. Been here talking about FIVB and Corona Light Wide Open. Still have Geeter here on the line with us. He's preparing for Dodgers this afternoon where he makes a living. But we have our first guest on the line. As a freshman at Long Beach State University, she replaced Misty May at setter. She followed a legend. She was a three-time All-Big West honoree, second-team All-American in her senior season, and showed her versatility by leading LBSU into the top 10, and she is in the top 10 in career aces, assists, digs, and block assists. She was also an academic all-district team and graduated with a degree in broadcast journalism and marketing, so the expectations are high on this show for her performance. She was an alternate on the 2004 Olympic team and played professionally in Puerto Rico. She comes from family. Her dad, Brian, played for the Nuggets. Her mom played volleyball and basketball at Southern Colorado and has a couple of brothers, Luke and Dylan. Luke is in the major leagues with the Kansas City Royals. She's partnered with all kinds of different legends, Logan Thom, Holly McPeak, and most recently Carrie Walsh, where they took a seventh in Poland just this year. Welcome into the show, the Corona Light Wide Open champion from Siesta Key, Florida, Brittany Hochevar. Brittany, we've been killing your last name, and I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. It gets killed pretty often.
Okay, give us the correct pronunciation so we can move on and be right.
Okay, it's Hochevar.
Hochevar.
I just said that.
You did, but I forgot it.
I know you did, Geeter. You had my back.
And Brittany, I'm sorry. I should have remembered that from years ago when we were on the national team at the same time, and so considered an apology.
No problem.
Hey, this has been a really interesting season for you with partner switching and moving in different tournaments and country quotas and stuff. Give yourself a grade for early 2011.
Excuse me? Give myself a break? Is that what you said?
No, give yourself a grade for early 2011. It seems like it's been
a
very performance. Yeah, grade.
Yeah, a grade. I would say I'm playing the best I've ever played. And I'm really excited to have the opportunity to play with Carrie Walsh and play with, the players that I have in the past. But, you know, right now I feel like I'm playing the best ball that I've played in the sand for sure. And the partner switches and stuff, you know, that's kind of the name of the game. That's part of this fickle sport, but I'm just trying to take it one day at a time, and that's been, you know, proven to me time and time again. Is as long as I put one foot in front of the other, the path will be laid down for me, and decisions have been made for me pretty much, and so I'm just embracing each opportunity that comes my way.
You mentioned,
you know,
and how you played and how. Talk about the differences between the indoor. It sounds like you're still learning how to play in the sand, even a few years on.
Well, this is my third full season without splitting time by playing professionally indoor overseas anywhere. This is, considering last year's I guess, with the AVPs dissolving the way it did and not getting a full year of competition in last year. This is kind of my third and a half, fourth year full-time in the sand, having a true preseason, off-season to train specifically for the sand and not going overseas and not playing indoor during the winter months. And so, yeah, I mean, the second you stop learning, I think you're, you know, that doesn't happen. You're always learning. You're always gaining new insights or skills or you know, dealing with something new every time out.
You know, I'm going to jump in there. You know, Barney and Britt, this is something about Britt that I realized this weekend. There are players in beach volleyball that after you put in your time and you play a certain amount of seasons, you become, you kind of cross over from that player that's got a lot of potential and they're good and they go through the ups and downs to a veteran type player who just knows the game. And I noticed watching Brittany this week, she just had a different look about her. She won matches, I thought, because she knows how to play the game, and she was just the best player out on the court. You're 100% agree with you that you're playing your best volleyball right now. Do you get that feeling this season, though, that you feel so much more comfortable because you've put in that time and you've now had some seasons under your belt?
Absolutely. I think definitely, you know, getting those seasons under my belt and making some tough decisions, you know, both on the court and off the court, making some tough decisions that were best for me and kind of what I envisioned for, you know, not only my career but for my life. And you got to be willing to make those tough decisions, whether it's a partnership switch or, you know, whether it's, you know, something day to day. But I mean, as you fellows know, those are the hard decisions that separate the good from the great. And when it comes to the level of the Olympics, it's 2 points, 2 inches, 2 seconds, and the differences are just so slim that I think over time I feel myself kind of getting closer and closer to exactly what I was intended to do.
Brittany, we've talked about on this show a lot of the tough decisions that must have been made by all the players last year with the AVP going out of business and then just kind of no one really knowing what was happening all the way into the spring. Talk about your process through that and how you dealt with it and deciding to continue to play volleyball.
There was no question in my mind that I would continue to play volleyball. I know what my passion is. I know where my heart is. And, you know, the AVP was a facet of you know, which I was allowed to play domestically. You know, my heart has always been towards the Olympic Games, and that hasn't changed anything. And when the AVP went under, that didn't change. That just meant, you know, now's the time that I go full-time FIVB. And I've always known FIVB was a goal of mine. It was just a matter of when and the timing and the partnerships and stuff like that. I partnered with Diane Denekeche last year, and she was an older player, a veteran player with two girls, and she didn't want to spend the time on the road, and which was completely understandable. She's in a different place in her career, but I didn't want to miss that opportunity to play with a player like herself. So for me, it was just no question that you know, my training picks up and I stay on point and try to break in to the FIVB tour. And I know that I'm coming in late with no points and whatnot, and girls have been on the tour for a while and have accumulated those points. So I'm going over there and I'm just creating a country quota match, really. And I know what I signed up for, and I know I got to grovel a little bit, but I'm okay with that.
Hey, Britt, I like the partnership with you and Lisa Rutledge. What was your feeling after this weekend? I mean, she's one of the few females out there that can really change the game with her blocking. You guys seem to have real good chemistry and a real good fit.
Yeah, I really like the chemistry. This was our first event together, and you know, there was a lot of things that we needed to iron out that you kind of just can't get in practice, regardless of how hard or how tough practice is. It was nice to have you know, the $5,000 bounty on our head for every match. It was nice to, you know, be the number one seed and compete. And, you know, as matches went on, the competition got tougher. And we were able to iron stuff out faster, especially with our transition type of play. But the chemistry did feel really good. And she's definitely a player that can take over a match, get a stuffy, and she sort of, in the finals, in the third set, she got a stuffy. She, you know, funneled the ball right to me. I put it away. We transitioned out of it. She served an ace down the middle, and that was the difference. And so it was really nice to kind of work through some stuff. And I'm excited.
Geeter, I was just leaving space for you.
See, Britt, we're not in the same room, so it's a little bit tougher.
Normally we are. Hey, Britt, talk about the business side of things and how you're getting through the financial side of playing beach volleyball at this point, with the prize money not being there and sponsors being hard to come by. Do you have sponsors? How much time do you spend trying to get sponsors? And how are you able to navigate the dollars needed to continue your career?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thousands of dollars worth question right there. It's all going on my United Chase Visa.
At least you're getting miles.
So I'm scoring the miles while I'm in the air, but you know what, right now it's all on me. You know, my family has been amazing as far as helping out here and there when I need it. But you know, I'm just right now it's on me. I am accumulating some debt, but I know that's going to turn around soon. And really it's a leap of faith. It's a full faith journey. There's not much, more I can explain on that part. Other than I know I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. I do spend a little bit of time on the business side of that as far as, having my sponsorship portfolio and meeting with, you know, people and whatnot. But, you know, I've tried to expend my energies in that area in the past, and it took away from my training, and it took away from what I wanted to do. I really don't want to put my time and energy in hustling, I guess you could say.
You want to play.
And I want to play. And I think there's a spectrum of players, especially in our sport. You know, you got some players that spend their time hustling and getting the sponsors and talking to the right people at the right time and making themselves available for every player party and whatnot, to kind of rub elbows and everything. And I kind of had to have a meeting with myself and, you know, say, geez, that's just not me. That's exhausting. I want to be the player that's winning tournaments where people are just coming up to me and offering that. And you know, there's every type of player in that spectrum as far as, like, how much time is actually spent towards self-promotion. And I decided to kind of give that over to the powers that be and not concern myself with it, because my concerns are in my training, my concerns are in my play, and it's paying off. And that's what I love doing in the first place. And I figured, you know, that's going to take care of itself. Where the money comes from is not my concern, because I'm playing to be an Olympian, and I'm not playing for the money. The money just, that's a bonus. That'll happen. But I'm playing to get to London. I'm playing to get to Rio, and that's when it's a true, when it's a true passion. That's when it's a, when you're driven by truth, I guess.
You're listening to Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to beach professional player Brittany Hochevar. Brittany, you know, that you make a great point about the focus of it all, and the focus of being an Olympian and having that, and the money just kind of coming, and the focus that it takes to have success. You know, you've spent time on the national team training hours and hours a day, and you describe, you know, honing in on what you're doing instead of trying to be a self-promoter or some other things, be the best player you can be. Talk about the vibe of the Corona Light Wide Open this past weekend, which has as part of its appeal kind of the party atmosphere and the players' parties and the interaction there. How do you, as a player, approach that aspect of that particular tour?
That's a great question. And I approach that the way I approach every single day of my life. I'm going to be the best me I can be. And I don't change for anybody or anything. And so I came in, I knew what my objective was, and that was to get better with Lisa. And that was for us to, you know, work some stuff out before we head over for the 2 months in Europe for the FIVB season. And it was to win. And that didn't change my focus at all. That didn't, you know, the style of the tournament can be the style of the tournament. The promoter, that's their job. The promoter's job is to promote. My job is to play. And I'm not getting those lines confused.
You mentioned going to play FIVB. You have a couple of months to be over there. What's your plan? Are you guys staying over? Are you going back and forth? What arrangements have been made, and how have you been able to craft a plan for the participation in the FIVB?
You know what? For the first time in my life, my heart doesn't long to be anywhere other than where it is. And so we're planning on staying over there, and we're really embracing the fact that we go from one city to the next, and it's stop after stop. And we don't see a need to come home. We don't see a need to come back to California. And what I don't, you know, it's that's where my heart is, and is where it's supposed to be, is one event at a time, one day at a time. So our plan is to stay over there. There is only 1 week off during that 2 months within Europe, Russia, Canada. There's only 1 week off, and we're actually planning on being in Italy that week to train and with the Italians.
It's a beautiful time to be in Italy. It sure beats the winter time when you're playing professionally, and it's kind of like Cleveland.
Very true. Very true.
Hey, we mentioned at the Open that your dad was a professional athlete, played for the Denver Nuggets. What kind of advice has he had for you through this time period? Or have you seeked him out, or is there someone else that you've looked to through this kind of introspective period?
Absolutely. You know, Dad is an amazing, amazing person. And you know, our family's very, very close. He does understand the business. He does understand high-level athletics, you know, as I guess you could say I'm in the family business. So, we, you know, there's a lot of that we do understand. But the thing that just gets driven home time and time again is you got to love it. And you cannot allow your blessing to become a curse at any point. And it's not a grind. It's you get to play a game, and to play it at the highest level means enjoying it at the good and the bad and the ups and the downs. You know, who said roller coasters aren't fun? And that's what professional sports are. And and just enjoying the highs and the lows, because it all comes from the same place.
That's a great point. I really like that. Geeter, what else you got for us before we let Brittany get back to her focus? I think we may have lost Geeter. Somehow he was muted. No wonder it was so quiet. We got rid of him for all that period.
I'm here.
Yeah. You have anything for
Brittany? I am here.
Before we let her go?
No, I'm just, I think she's got a great outlook on things, and I've always loved her competitive fire, and I'm stoked for you, Britt. I'm glad to hear that you're going over for those 2 months, because why not take a run at it? You know, I know you wanted to be at the World Championships, but you know what? I think when you get over there, you just go through those country quotas, and just like you did with the AVP, you take that road, and I know you're going to get after it. So congratulations. I think you well-deserved yesterday.
Thanks, Geeter. I appreciate it.
And, Britt, thanks so much for coming on the show. I think in the last 10 minutes, you've given us at least 5 quotable quotes that we can clip out, and that's close to a record on this show anyway. So the broadcaster does the degree paying off for sure.
Cool. Thank you guys so much. Great to
be
thanks. On.
We'll look forward to following you over in the FIVB Tour.
Sounds good. Have a good day.
All right, see you. Brittany Hochevar, former national team athlete, beach player on the rise. Her and her partner, Lisa Rutledge, keep an eye on them on the FIVB. It's going to be good. That's one of those names, Geet, we talked about the possibilities, and there's so many different players. You talk just within the United States, there's a lot of different teams that have chances in tournaments.
Yeah, without a question. They are a good team. I was really impressed, Barney. Like I said, Rutledge is one of the few, you know, females, I think, coming from that AVP tour that can change a game blocking. She's that good of a blocker. So it's going to be a good partnership.
I really liked one quote she had. You know, she said, "For the first time, my heart is where I am," or something close to that,
yeah.
To paraphrase it. And I think that's so true for international athletes. Many times you're over there in Europe in the winter, and it's cloudy and it's dreary, and you're just grinding it out, and you're far from home, and you kind of get into some of that homesickness. And I think she made a fantastic point about you just have to be where you are, and you have to not let your gift become a curse. You know, don't let your blessing become a curse. And I wish in my career I'd figured that out earlier, that, hey, this is something special, you know, because for so many of the athletes, myself included, it's just what you've done. You've done it your entire life. You've been good at it. You've just sort of gone from step to step, and there's not a lot of perspective in that. There's not a lot of, oh, I went to work for, a professional company, was doing 40 or 50 hours a week and trying to find time to work out and trying to find time to go out and have a good time and participate in some sports. You never had that. You always just had the job of playing sports, and that was, you know, when you were under your parents' wing in high school and then on into college, where you probably had a scholarship on the women's side if you were that good, and on the men's you had part of it, and just great situations, and on to the national team, and then you're playing for professional teams, and they're taking care of you and taking care of so many different things. You don't have the perspective that you need, and I think it's great for players like Brittany to spend a long enough time in the game to gain that perspective and have the appreciation for what it is that she gets to do as a job.
Yeah, without question. And one thing we didn't talk about with her, Barney, was she had a back injury a few years ago where she had two different doctors that wanted to do surgeries and she thought she would never play again, but she went about it differently and didn't want to take that road and did some other methods organically and stuff and worked, got stronger, and she's never been healthier. So, you know, those quotes that you had talked about, it's funny you said there's probably four or five things in there, you know, when she said them, I was like, God, that's nice. You know, you love hearing that from an athlete.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, hey, we have much more to come here on the show. Still have the FIVB men's report from Beijing. We're going to keep Geeter on the line just a little longer for that, and then we're going to talk indoor. Got men's and women's teams both in action. The men were in Brazil for a couple of thrilling matches against huge crowds, 15,000, 17,000.
Wow.
Kind of like my DJ gigs.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen video of that. So,
hey, dudes, I will see you guys. I will talk to you guys later. I got to get rolling.
You do? Oh, man, we need you for the FIVB.
Okay, then I'll come back. Are we doing that right after the break?
Right after the break.
Okay.
VolleyballNetwork.com. Right back with Geeter McGee on the line. Kevin and Jeremy in the studio. Right back.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access to sport's biggest stars. Whether you're interested in junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com. And subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Welcome back in. Been an interesting show so far. Talked about the women, FIVB in Beijing. We got the men coming right up. And Brittany Hochevar joined us to talk about playing professionally. She and her partner, Lisa Rutledge, getting ready to head out on the FIVB. And Geeter thought he could get away, but we're not letting him out of here just yet.
Barney, I do have to say something. For all the people that are joining late and want to know where the Corona light wide open results are, there are none anywhere. They're not posted anywhere. I don't know when they're going to be. People were tweeting me all day yesterday. Even right after I would tweet them, they would still tweet me back and say, who's winning? So there are no more results. They're not going to be out there. But I promise everyone out there that are listening to our show, our faithful fans that come here every single Monday and listen, I am going to go to Billy Berger and Steve Lindecki myself and find a way to get those results posted, because those are the fans that we got to make happy, because they're the ones that care the most, and it frustrates them not being able to find out these results.
Yeah, it's the CBVA, the California Beach Volleyball Association, which is the amateur organization here, until they start posting results at least. I mean, the money's great that they're paying some players. I like that they have bounties and other kinds of interesting stuff, but let's just know who won. Can we just know who was involved?
Yeah, well, I can tell you this. You know, Britt and Lisa won. They beat Jenny Kropp and Pav and Pavlik in the finals. They also played in the winners bracket final against Pav and Jenny Kropp. Both were really good matches. Actually, Jenny Kropp and Pav won the first in the final, and then Britt and Lisa won the next two. So they took second. I want to say third was maybe Jen Schneider and Aaron Gray. Fourth, I think, was Brooke and Kristen, Brooke Sweat. And then I want to say that fifth was Geisen and Crystal Morrison, so they did a real nice job. On the men's side, second place was Olson McCullough. Third was Williams and Ty Loomis. Fourth was Fred and Rodrigo, and Walk Vogel Strickland were fifth. That's all I got off the top of my brain.
Okay. Well, let's get to FIVB. I know Jeremy's got the top five from the FIVB Beijing Slam up. Tell us the top five over there.
Brazil won. Alisson and Emmanuel beat the Germans, Julius and Jonas. Third place was Jefferson and Patrick from Switzerland. And then fourth place was a team from Poland whose names I cannot pronounce.
Okay,
there
fair enough.
A bunch of letters on there that I don't know how they go together. And Phil and Todd rounded it off with a fifth. Phil had an ankle injury, supposedly, and they had to pull out from what I understand.
Yeah, Geeter, what do we know about that? We were searching for some updates on Phil and how bad his ankle was. It sounded, from what I read, the brief description was just an ankle sprain, and it was a question of whether he'd be able to participate in Rome next week.
Yeah, I see that he is still the number one seed in Rome. They're in the same pool with Jennings and Wong. I was trying to find out information. Adam Roberts was one of the few people that actually contacted Phil or Phil's fiance through text, and he had turned to go for a ball after Todd dug it, and I think it was in the quarterfinal match, and he sprained it, and it definitely wasn't good. I mean, he couldn't go. And all A-Rob said to me was that, it sounded kind of nasty. So not sure how he's healed the last couple days or what the extent of it was, but a real big bummer. But that's the play how it happened. Roger dug a high ball off net, Phil turned to go, and sprained it.
You know, it strikes me as interesting that on the men's side of the game, you have Brazil, Germany, Poland, Switzerland, the United States all in the top five. That really shows you where this game has gone professionally in the last 15 years. You think back to the beginning of the FIVB, the rest of the world wasn't nearly as good, nor was the FIVB the premier tour. The AVP at the time was the premier tour, and people were striving to be on that particular tour here in the United States versus the world event. And now, gosh, if you have five countries in the top five, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, the game has just grown, and people have money behind the game. And I think you and Reed talk about it all the time on the indoor side, how popular it is, how many people are coming to matches. And, you know, it's being streamed on HD. Well, in the beach game, countries are putting money behind it. They're hiring coaches. They're paying players a good amount of money. They're getting the best athletes in their country to play beach volleyball. So, you know, the parity is there, and the World Tour has never been stronger, without a doubt.
Geets, thanks for hanging on. We appreciate it. Go off and make your money. Get it done.
I appreciate that, buddy. I'm going to try my best, all right? You guys are good kids. Hang in there.
In the background, she's still happy. No, even though it's not easy. Millie's still stoked.
Yeah, she's on fire, even though that there's a new addition.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Geeter. Talk to you soon.
All right, kids.
All right, Chris McGee checking in, our resident beach expert.
Do we believe that he was actually at home, or was he like sitting on the beach? I know the sun's not out right now, but
no, I could hear Millie there.
Oh, okay,
you could hear Millie in the background for sure.
I will say this, and now I didn't get a lot of sleep last night, and I believe I read this on Phil's Twitter yesterday, that I mean on Todd's Twitter, I apologize, that they're going to be a go for the next tournament. So we'll see.
Good. You know, there's all manner of electrodes, ice, strange compression devices all being used on that ankle.
And if Phil has to elevate his foot above his head, though, how, I mean, That's pretty high.
I'm thinking upside down boots hanging.
Like in the original Batman when Michael Keaton was hanging upside down to sleep?
Exactly. And Michael Keaton, let's be honest, best Batman. Well, maybe till the last one.
I'm a huge Batman fan, and I know this has nothing to do with volleyball.
No, but we can get off track for a minute.
But what's-his-face, whose name is not coming to me right now, that did the last Batman?
Yeah.
I was okay with him until...
What's-his-face?
Christian Bale.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I was okay with him until the last Batman one. I just felt like when you put the mask on, your voice doesn't need to change that dramatically.
What do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Was that his acting, just to
change
his voice?
It's like David Putty from Seinfeld.
I think he was in a full panic that the Joker was way better than he was, and he had to do something.
Joker was out of control. Yeah. I could see how that might drive you a little insane if you're Heath Ledger and you're kind of going to that place all the time in your head.
Yeah. Well, it's just the movie was about
Anarchy.
The Joker, not about the Batman.
Yeah, but I liked him. After going through so many other Batmans, where was it, Val Kilmer? Who else? There's one other
Val
one
Val Kilmer and George Clooney.
Yeah, and George Clooney. Clooney was okay. Kilmer was terrible.
They went very cartoonish with those guys. They finally got back to what the real Batman is.
Well, the real Batman is pretty dark.
No doubt.
But, yeah, the cartoonish thing with the Iceman and Arnold and the Joker and, oh, my God, Tommy Lee Jones. And
Two-Face.
I like the new Two-Face. It's the guy from History of Violence, wasn't it, who was in there. That looks like him. Because it was the beginning of Two-Face. It happened in this last one. Again, it's sort of repetitious, but I really enjoyed the new actor versus Tommy Lee Jones and the purple weird jumpsuit thing that he had going.
It was awkward. Yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm looking at the chat board right now. I'm surprised nobody's making fun of us. We're talking about Batman at the moment.
Hey, people, you know, we've been on the air for almost an hour now. We can talk about other things. I know you're a bunch of volley dorks out there and love this show because we talk a lot of volleyball, but bottom line is we could talk about other stuff, pop culture, how LeBron James threw in the towel, that kind of stuff.
Somebody did say that they'd rather have us talk about the women or the actresses in Batman as opposed to the men.
Talk about Poison Ivy versus Catwoman versus whoever else. Think of who else, Kim Basinger in the original.
Yep. Can't go, I mean, just stop there and you're good.
Yeah, Kim Basinger in the day. Maybe had to do the fact that I was like, you know, 15, 16. Like,
that's fine.
Yes.
Nothing wrong
with that. She had it going on. Hey, let's get back to World League for a second. The United States headed down to Brazil, played against Brazil, two matches there, and I mentioned the crowds, no joke, 15,000 people for like a 10 a.m. match on Saturday, and then Sunday, standing room only, 17,000 people. That's fire marshal time, people. Unbelievable popularity of volleyball in Brazil, and the national team in particular, and when they match up with the United States, who is, in fact, Brazil's kryptonite.
I would have loved to have been there.
Oh, it would have been sick.
I was a little bummed that Reed didn't give me a call and tell me to come down.
Try and get you in good with the Brazilian Federation?
Exactly.
Yeah, so the United States, night number one, goes down 3-1. And this was pretty much what I expected. In looking at what was going on, I expected the United States would not win. I thought that actually they would go down and lose both matches. Having seen the Puerto Rico match last week and seen the Poland matches the week before, the United States is not playing good volleyball in those matches. They looked very ragged through both episodes in Poland. And then against Puerto Rico on night number one, it was which team could make more mistakes. It was three sets of two teams making mistakes on their own side, not even really competing against the team on the other side. It was just really wild. The United States managed to come out with a victory in night number one. And then night number two, Matt Anderson played very well, and I hope that continues. It did continue the second night against Brazil, Matt Anderson having a great performance. I want to see that out of that particular player.
How much time have they really had to practice together? Because I know they all just came back together, and now they're just being thrown into playing these matches. It's like they don't really know each other again yet, right?
True. And that's part of the conundrum with the international schedule nowadays. And the coaches talk about it, and Doug Beal kind of fought it for a while and during my time on the team, that you don't have extended training periods together. Teams are put together right in May, and they have to play within a month. And then they have a little bit of training time in the middle, perhaps. The United States, I think, had 8 weeks last year, which is extremely unusual. And then again, you debate like competition versus training. But they then are apart. The guys will leave in October to go to their pro teams, come back for a week to then go to the World Championship event. Then they're gone again, and you don't see them until May. So it's a very odd system in that you never have an extended period of time where you can put in your system of play, your philosophy of play, and really work with players on individual development skills. You're basically ceding that development period to a professional league. That's why it's so important for a player like Matt Anderson, who went to Italy this past year. There's a good experience. Most likely, you can have a bad experience, but there's probably a good experience there with knowledgeable volleyball people, good events against good teams, playing against other good players, and being in the gym with other good players. Problem for Matt was before he was over in Korea, where you have players who aren't great. You have Matt's great in the league, his team won, all that's fantastic, but really, how many quality matches are you getting in that 6 or 8 months?
And it's not making him better.
No. Being the big fish in a little pond is not making you any bigger. The pond is still too small. You know, it's like being in an aquarium. You can only grow to the size of your own aquarium. So his experience was great. And now coming back together this year, so much pressure with leaping right into World League, having Brazil in your pool, and this being an Olympic qualification year. I think there's a lot of different weird stuff going on. Throw on to that, Alan Knipe and his staff still trying to get their feet under them, although I think this year will be judgment time. I'm going to pass judgment on their performance this year. I've given them a pass the last two. They didn't really know the international volleyball. They didn't really know the teams. They didn't really know all their players. Hey, 2 years in, your whole third season behind you. Come November, we're going to be talking about whether Alan and Gary have been getting it done.
We're either going to be chucking them under the bus or patting them on the back is what you're saying.
Well, they'll have put themselves under the bus.
Gotcha.
Or have put themselves in the massage parlor. I don't know. You know, either way, we will be giving them a grade, but I think it's on them this year. So I think they're feeling that. I know the players are feeling that. And also the players are in a weird spot because you have 10 guys left from that 12-man roster that won gold in 2008. You have only Tom Hoff and Lloyd Ball missing. Everybody else is still present. So you have a situation where there's a bunch of old guys who've been to the war, right? They've been slogging it out, most of those guys, for 12-plus years, three Olympics in most cases. And then you have a group of guys who are brand new to the sport. They're brand new to the team in the last couple of years, and they're looking to establish themselves, and they have to displace some of those old guys. And we mentioned it last week on this show that the old guys, in some ways, have to train the young guys to replace them.
To take their spot.
Yeah, and that's present in a lot of different work, but it's very, very strange for them to have to do.
Speaking of the old guys.
Speaking of old guys, look who just walked in with the boy. Reed Pretty. Unexpected. Good thing we have a mic ready for you.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good. Look at the little man.
Packed house in here.
It is.
Yeah, we got my boys in here because they're off school. Your boy, the wife, Lindsay, coming in.
Hey.
Hi, Linz.
So,
like a reunion.
So Geeter's a no-show.
He called in
from
the beach. He was leaking it.
Right on.
He talked to us for a while. It was nice of him.
Kevin wouldn't let him get off the line.
Yeah, he wanted to go. I'm like, no, we're not done with you, sir. So?
Well, yeah, I got a big beef with you not watching the game. I mean,
I don't watch until Wednesday.
I don't care.
Dude, I don't want to try and beat me because I'll sit there commentating myself and then I have to try and beat myself come Wednesday.
I believe Reed called us losers on the email for not watching.
That was not cool.
Was that directed to you? I didn't take it like he was talking to me, even though I was copied on the email.
You know, I've got some self-worth issues now, so I kind of took it personally.
Reed, I was out of the country with no internet access, so I have an excuse.
How was it, by the way?
It was good. Good family time.
I think we flew over there. Weren't you in the Caribbean somewhere?
No, I was in Mexico.
Oh, okay. Yeah, definitely did not fly over that way. We take the long route. I think we were up in Canada somewhere and then back down to Europe. 31 hours, by the way, to get there. If Doug Beal, if you're listening, we need to have a conversation.
Oh, 31 hours? This is a trip that's normally not too bad.
You guys don't
what
have a,
on
no
earth
private
happened?
Jet? No private jet for the
dude,
team?
Traveling to Brazil or Argentina was always my favorite for long trips because you were at least near your own time zone, and it was just sort of like a bad night's sleep. You fly to Miami, and then you take the Miami flight down overnight. What on earth happened?
Well, there was a canceled flight, and we didn't find out about it till late. And
oh,
so,
happened.
You know,
yeah.
You know, we're 5-hour layover in Rio, and it was not good. But it all worked out, and on the way home, Alan Knipe stepped it up and buddied up with the captain and got four of us upgraded, which was crucial.
Nice.
Man, you know what I don't get is when you're sitting in the economy, and Evan Paddock said it well. He's like, you know, If you're not a big person, you don't really understand the recline function, and you don't get it to like the respect issue. And sure enough, some girl that's not very tall is in front of me, and she just goes full recline, and it's not like a gentle recline, and it's
slamming it back.
Oh, just slamming it back,
looking for some knees.
Yeah, and then it's like a train because I have to recline to be able to see my TV. Otherwise, I'm like slumped down.
Yeah.
You know, trying to view the TV in the backrest. But, you know, whatever. It's part of the deal. Hopefully, we can try to change that for the future. But it was amazing, you guys. 18,000-plus people just going nuts, loving. I mean, literally, it's a 10 a.m. match. And by 9:30, the place is packed and like jumping up and down and singing, and it just is a pretty cool thing to be a part of.
Awesome. We were just talking about it because I was just reacting kind of Puerto Rico last week that I did on Wednesday, and I was describing your guys' performance thus far as ragged, and Puerto Rico included. It didn't look good, and so you guys stepping into Brazil, I thought it was going to go 3-0. You guys didn't break 20.
Wow.
But. Well, that's just the volleyball I'd seen.
It was his honest opinion. He was hoping you weren't going to show up to hear that. But
but now I see that, you know, night number one, you guys got one set, but it wasn't a great match necessarily from your side. What was the difference? Night number two, you guys beat them 3-1 in front of a bigger crowd in what had to have been a great match. I think it was set number four or set number three was a barn burner. And what was the difference on your side of the net? Because I think it's been in control of you guys. It's been my opinion the whole time. Like, look, we're not putting out a team. The United States is not putting out a team that can't win. The United States has all the talent in the gym. What's going on? What was the difference finally getting some good volleyball underneath you?
You know, there was after the first night, it was and you're right, it's been inconsistent. That's how I've been describing it, and
yeah.
I think that's how we've been feeling. And I was just telling Lindsay, and I'll probably share this with the guys, the best analogy that I can think of is like we drive the green and then four putt. And so we have these instances where it's not just errors. We're not trying to play perfect, but we're putting ourselves in situations that are great situations because I think we've got a great team.
Yeah.
But then we four putt, and after you do that two or three holes in a row, it's hard to just say, "Hey, let's go side out and get the next one." And it's kind of a, you know, kind of a snowball effect that's just kind of pulling everybody down. And so after the first night, there was a lot of dialogue in the locker room with the team and the coaching staff and. And it was basically like, look, let's get back to playing like a team. And no matter what, through thick and thin, a similar conversation that we had back down in Brazil for the World League that was really forming for the team. And the second night, we made a commitment to do two things. One was to play like a team always through thick and thin. And the second thing was better the ball, you know, not just all the way around. If it's not a great pass, make a better set. If it's not a great set, make a better hit. Make good choices. We were, you know, me especially, you know, late in night number one, I start trying to do too much. And I think you've got six guys that stop trusting each other. And instead of just making a smart play out of a situation that's not a great situation, you know, don't hit low seam into the middle hoping that it's going to happen. Put it in, trust your teammates. And the second night, we definitely had small strings of mistakes and errors where we definitely could have fractured. But with that commitment, everyone stuck to it, came together, and it helped us to weather the storm.
Outside hitters, 17 kills for Matt Anderson, 15 kills for yourself, both with 30 attempts. And then Clay Stanley, 8 kills on 33 attempts. Not a great night for Clay, but it seems like the offense was kind of able to run through you and Matt. Talk about what you saw a difference in Matt. And Matt played one very good match in Puerto Rico, and they were targeting him passing-wise for sure. But now here against, hey, world number one Brazil, you come in. You come up with a bunch of points. You have a great night. Tell us about him.
You know, Matt is getting better every match, and he's got the ability. When he goes slow to fast, that's what really one of the things that he's working on is not to be one speed. That he and Alan are in constant dialogue with that and trying to make sure that he keeps his dynamicism, if that's a word, you know, to be
sure. It is today.
It is now.
To be dynamic. You know, when he's dynamic, he plays at a height and a power. I mean, you'll see when you see the match that I think it was late in the fourth set. He just goes completely over the block, and the ball was going to be out. But he hit it so hard that Bravo couldn't get out of the way and just tags him in the chest and point and kill. And those are the things that he has the ability to do. And you know, he is being targeted as a passing target, so he's got a lot on his plate. And you know, with every rep, I mean, he's great for us. He made some big block moves for us, and definitely handling a lot of offense. And of course, with Brian Thornton setting, he likes to go quick, big outside. You know, that's kind of in his wheelhouse. As
he came from UC Irvine, where he was under John Spraw and under basically the U.S. system.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's one of those things where we're just in playing mode. And I think our team, it's great on one hand, but on the other hand, it would be nice to be able to just rep things out and, you know, kind of get on the same page. But you know what? I like what I see. I'm almost glad that we started so fast playing, because I think that it just kind of raises the bar of awareness. Sometimes you get stuck in your own gym. And I think that happened to us last year where, you know, we think we're at a certain level early in the summer. Then we go play matches and then the entire gym gets raised, you know, two more notches just because they were exposed. This put us right into the fire. And I'm convinced if we can somehow host World League next year, give us Russia, give us Brazil, give us Serbia, put us in the toughest pool, because that's going to only be beneficial in the long run for us.
You make a good point about the level of play, and sometimes when you are in your own gym for a while, you think, oh yeah, things are going pretty well, and you don't realize what's out there. And now you guys come in this year, boom, right in the gym, against Poland, who's decent, Puerto Rico, kind of a middle-of-the-road thing, but then Brazil, then you really see right now, and everybody in that gym knows, hey, either we're there or we're not there. There's work to do. So that's a great point. Now, Brian Thornton, for those that haven't been following it closely, came in, replaced Donald Sujo back against Puerto Rico, has played very well. At about 6'3", not a remarkable jumper. I wonder about his blocking. It seems like he runs an offense. Coach Alan Knight mentioned even before the season about Thornton's ability to run an offense and make decisions, which is so critical. But then there are adjustments to be made, and we've seen it with Italy in the past, with DeGiorgi or Weber down in Argentina when he was a great setter 10 years ago. There are adjustments to be made because Thornton is small, not a big jumper. So are you guys able to compensate for that, or do you feel like you're compensating for that with his ability to put hitters in good situations?
What Thornton brings is you don't think about him too much in the sense of you're not worried. I mean, he's getting his job done. He's bringing a fire, a passion, and that's great. And he's just competitive. He's a sneaky blocker. I tell you, he might even have more stuff blocks than I did this last weekend. I think that when the play gets long, you know, maybe there's some drifting issues where you know, maybe he becomes a block out person. But as soon as he realizes that, just up and over, sometimes I much prefer hitting against a bigger guy because they're in your line of vision.
You can see them.
Yeah, you know that they're there.
Yeah, and so he's a sneaky blocker. I mean, he had some blocks in some really important moments, and he even went a triple block one late in the match yesterday, and threw a little tip down. It was nice.
Awesome. Well, you guys are in pretty good shape, because weekend number one, when you dropped your one match to Poland, there was a situation where in the 14 pools, there are four 14 pools, 16 teams, where every team or every pool had a team that went 2-0. And then every pool had a 1-1 split in the middle. Then you guys went on to Puerto Rico, took care of business there, so coming out 3-1, and now a split with Brazil really puts you in good shape. In your pool, you're listed as the best second place team at this point. You guys are 4-2, Brazil 5-1 at the halfway mark through pool play. And this is critical because you're in Poland's pool. Poland is guaranteed a spot in the final. It will be an 8-team final. What they will do is take the four top teams from the pools. Whoever wins the pool goes. Then the next three best second-place teams, if Poland is not one of those teams. So you have to be a good second-place team. The United States in good shape now at 4-2. I want to recap some of the other pools. Argentina. At 5-1 is leading Pool C with Serbia at 3-3. That's surprising to me, Serbia at 3-3. Portugal 3-3 in that pool. Finland 1-5. Not what Finland wanted to be doing. I thought they were a team that was kind of on the rise, but now with some coaching changes, a little bit of problems. Italy reemergence with the former Finnish coach, Mauro Brutto. Brutto, I think is correct. Italy is 6-0 in Pool D. Korea 3-3. Cuba 3-3. France 0-6. That surprise you, Reed? France 0-6.
They were up 2-1. We actually caught some of the match in Brazil. They were showing all sorts of matches live on TV, which was nice. And they were up 2-1, and Cuba crept back. But they've got some guys that can play. That's for sure. It's interesting. A lot of us were talking about the fact that you play long enough, you kind of see some of these teams disappear and then rise up again.
Yeah.
And, you know, Argentina is going to be a really tough team here in the next decade. They've got some young guys that play really fast, very competitive. So I see them coming back. And I think France, too. You know, Cuba just has too hard of a time keeping players. And we had an interesting discussion after the match yesterday. Before our flight, if Cuba is, you know, has a different leader and everyone gets recalled, who starts? Does Leon start? I mean, it's one of those questions that we fool around off air quite a bit. But, man, that's a country that the rest of the world look out if they ever have any sort of government change and can bring their guys back. But there's some teams that can do some damage.
Geopolitical forces at work in the volleyball world. It would be interesting to see because a lot of those guys that left, that was about 4 or 5 years ago, a lot of those guys still of playing age, playing very well. Angel Dennis in Italy, last report, still playing well, and a few other guys I can't even think of.
Yeah, I don't even think Leon, as good as he is, I don't think he starts. I don't. I think Marshall and Wantarena is their starting outside group.
Marshall, you talk about Marshall. I mean, people will get a chance to see Puerto Rico and get a chance to see Hector Soto jump. Hector Soto is one of two players in the world I can think of that will stop warm-ups in a world-class match because all the other players are watching him hit. His jumping ability is unbelievable. And then there's Leonid Marshall, and he is more than Soto, in my opinion. He's about 6'3", and he's got to jump 50-plus. I mean, it's got to be in the low 50s. It's an unbelievable thing to watch a human do.
He's getting his feet caught on the top of the net.
Dude, it's sick. It's sick how high this guy can jump. And he literally, in warm-ups, you will watch him every ball that he hits.
Wow.
I don't know if he's learned to hit line yet. He couldn't hit line to save his life a couple of years ago.
I wonder if Rosenthal would be like that indoors, Sean.
I don't think he jumps that high.
He jumps pretty darn high.
He jumps high, but not – what Marshall does is too otherworldly.
Yeah, okay. Was it Marshall on YouTube? Those Volleywooders out there can confirm this on our chat board, but I'm almost certain that he hit an overpass from the back row, and it's on YouTube.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
He just decided not to pass it, just to swing away at it?
Yeah.
I actually like that mentality.
That's next level.
Just swing away.
Yeah, that's the evolution of the game right there. It's like X-Men stuff. You start seeing that make a big genetic leap. Hey, we didn't cover Pool B. Russia 6-0. No surprise there. Russia is a team, in my opinion, that can really be the best team in the world. They just don't believe in themselves enough quite yet. Bulgaria at 3-3 continues to middle through the world and be the most frustrating team to watch because they have so much talent and they stink half the time. In this case, exactly half the time. 3-3, and then Germany 2-4. Germany is one of those teams that just can't quite get the athletes, I think. We've seen them here and there be very good. And then Japan, I really wish for the world of volleyball, for the support economically of the world of volleyball, that the Japanese would be better, but they are 1-5, despite pouring millions of dollars into the sport, hosting events and promoting their own teams. And I just would love to see Japan be better. Their women playing very well have a chance. Kimori, her last name is escaping me right now, but Saiko, I can't remember, but she's a very good player on the women's side of the game, and the Japanese women certainly on the rise. So the United States looking good. You're the only 4-2 team in second place right now with half of it gone.
Well, I think we feel like every set we've lost, it's been our fault, and that's not to take anything away from the people we've played. We've played great teams, but we feel like, it's those things on our side of the net that we can do a little bit better that'll put us in a better situation. I think that's what we've identified as being good and bad. It's frustrating, but it's also good. There's room for improvement. So
I'd absolutely agree with that from the matches I've seen, from the Puerto Rico and the Poland matches. I mean, I said, I think before you came in, that Puerto Rico, night number one, it was almost two separate teams just playing against themselves. Like, it wasn't even a competition. It was who could just not make all these errors and mistakes in ball handling and hitting the ball out. It was a very odd match to watch because it was so non-competitive on both sides of the net. Very, very strange. Hey, let's take a short break. We'll come right back. Kevin Barnett sitting in the studio with DJ Roche and a surprise guest, Reed Pretty, and the whole family up here. Hey, we have David Portney from the AVCA coming up next. He's gonna give us the leg lamp, the major award. I'm looking forward to it. I don't see a big box here, David. Oh, it's tiny.
It's compact. It folds up.
It's something that's going to fit in the live stream when we get there. The Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. We'll be right back.
Won't you tell me something true? I believe in you.
Welcome back in the Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. Don't forget to check us out on iTunes. Just search Volleyball inside of the podcast. They're in the iTunes store, available for free, put up every week for your enjoyment. And email us, thenetlive@gmail.com and facebook.com/thenetlive for some interaction during the week. Hey, we're looking forward to figuring out how to get this live streaming thing going. We're going to get it done here in the studio. That's the whole point of moving into this studio. We've been talking to this next gentleman about that. He's from the AVCA. He's in charge of media and public relations. Is that
close enough?
Accurate?
I mean, it's everyone at the AVCA, we all wear many different hats.
You have to.
Yeah.
So, David Portney, thank you for joining us here. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome to be here.
Your very first trip to California. Now, you're a native New Jerseyan?
Yes, native New Jerseyan.
New Jerseyan. Is that what you guys are called?
Yeah. Usually, if you're talking about individuals.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of in there. A little.
Really? Okay. Well, usually it's your Jersey boy or Jersey girl.
Okay.
For individuals. So I'm a Jersey guy.
Well, you're not all pumped up, tanned, and with short hair. So right away, you're shattering my images of New Jersey.
But then, in that way, that's a good thing. I'm glad I came in.
And you're not, as far as we can tell thus far, in the mob. So all the New Jersey stereotypes going out the window. Turns out you might just be normal people.
Might be. Maybe, yes.
So this show used to be The Net Live. We used to just be The Net Live.
Just The Net Live.
Right. Now we are the award-winning Net Live. So you have to drop the second button.
Well, I proposed this to Jeremy before you came in.
Okay.
And how about, I mean, I'm not the show, so I'm not the one making
the
decisions.
We're open to suggestions.
Yes. But
this is an autocracy.
How about the award-winning TNL?
That's in the running.
See?
That's why we brought him in.
The award-winning TNL.
Yeah.
See, I always feel like when we use TNL, I feel like we're TRL, which is not a bad thing either.
Or,
Total Request Live, for those of you who don't remember.
Or SNL.
But it rolls off the tongue so well.
The award-winning TNL. I like that. So speaking of award-winning, now the Grant Berger Award, we were told, didn't even come with a completion certificate. But then, later, we were informed that, in fact, something was being made up.
Yeah, I put a lot of time and a lot of effort into this trophy.
It sounded like it.
Tons of time and lots of glue I'm ready when you are.
Let's do it. Let's see this trophy. Right, I know we have Reed Pretty still here in house. He stayed around just for this moment, just for the unveil.
I'm not listening to my headphones, but I'm sure there's some.
I wish I had a drum roll, but
no drum roll?
Hold on, hold your horses.
All right.
Don't be calling me out on the show.
There it is. Now, do you watch The Office?
It's a Dundee.
It's a Dundee. Now, I left all the little nameplates. See, it still says the Dundee and all the other, you know, hottest in the office kind of thing.
Nice.
So you can change it up depending on the mood, you know, and what's going on, you know, within the studio.
We've That's won awesome. A Dundee.
Yes.
And you've won a Dundee. And so basically I just took the plate out and put up the base of the trophy, hand wrote it, Grant Berger Media Award.
Awesome.
That's what it is. As I said, lots of time.
Uh-huh.
And then
a printout of AVCA.
Hey, it's in color. That's an extra 2 cents
cheap.
For a copy.
That's not cheap, yeah.
So,
all right. Wait,
I know I was expecting maybe a huge shrine around it as you complete the studio.
I think it just we have to adjust it in the intro. For our video intro, we'll have to adjust it just like they've been doing on The Office, you know?
There you go. I like it.
We have
like
our Dundee. Do I get a World's Best Boss coffee mug to go with it? Do I have to get one of those? Or does Reed get that now? It's always a joke that Reed's in charge.
You're lucky you're getting one of these, so...
You know, jokes are usually based in fact. Partially.
Sometimes.
Anyway. Well, thank you, David. Thank you. We've won the Grant Berger Award, and now we have an official award.
I mean,
the award-winning TNL.
Everything. It's legit.
That is awesome. Well, hey, we've had a good association with the AVCA. We did, of course, the College Volleyball Weekly, which started out with the women's side of the game and I think really hit its stride with the men's side of the game as we kind of worked our way into it. Talk about the involvement of the AVCA with the show, kind of the feelings about the show in the AVCA.
Oh, well, I mean, at least for me personally, and I'm sure other coworkers as well, Monday at 1 p.m. in Lexington, it's the Net Live. I mean, especially during the men's season when I do polls, and I was sending you guys the polls ahead of time.
Yeah, that was great.
And, I think that worked really well. And, you know, we'll talk about other logistical parts of our relationship later. But it's a great thing of what you guys do just because there aren't a lot of things, a lot of other broadcasts and podcasts and radio streams that talk volleyball. It's great that you guys talk about other things. You're talking about Batman earlier and everything, but you know, you're known
motocross.
As basically and motocross. There aren't many volleyball things like this. And so it's great what you guys are doing. And obviously we're trying to do everything we can to expand the sport. And, if we want to do that, we got to be part of the Net Live somehow. And this is, why I'm here.
See, I like this that he's just talking us up. You can come back anytime, by the way.
There you go. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us about the AVCA, some of the things you guys are doing. I know you're getting out there in other ways. You're trying to do some things with your magazines and, of course, the banquet and the awards at the Women's Final Four, which was a great event. That I hadn't really ever seen that gathering of coaches. Of course, as a player, I was always playing overseas most of the time or training. And I hadn't really ever seen how many volleyball people are coming together, volleyball companies, coaches, clinics, other folks who are looking to get into the volleyball world. Just tell us about some of the efforts and where they're going with the AVCA right now.
I mean, it's tough to say, oh, well, we're doing this and that because our entire existence is based on it.
Yeah.
So basically, every day we go to work, it's that mission and that mission statement. And, you know, we do, as we all know, very different things with the polls, and then awards is one of our big things, handling all the All-Americans and all of that. Right now, our big award is the Team Academic Award, and I can use this to book, you know,
yeah.
If you're a member, go to our website and apply to Team Academic website. It's a great cause, and we're trying to recognize all teams. So D1 is the same as club. I mean, if you have the necessary GPA as a team, you're eligible for the award. So go out there and do that and nominate your team. But, I mean, we basically, depending on the season, do various things. But basically every day we have education. We have, you know, educational webinars. We are always in constant communication with our members and other coaches. And as you all know, Kathy, and she's always flying around the country promoting.
Kathy DeBoer, president of the AVCA.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you guys have a very wide-reaching, ethos for the sport. You're into... education of coaches and honoring of players, men's
right.
and women's.
And that's why it's hard to directly answer the question saying,
yeah.
Well, what are we doing? Well, I mean, do you want to have a 12-hour show? I mean, not quite.
Is there a PowerPoint presentation?
Right. It's basically, you know, as I was saying, you know, we go to work every day with that mission in mind. And I know that was asked, I think it was in the chat room last week, and someone asked, oh, well, what are you guys doing? And I said the short answer, go to our website and just browse around a little bit, and you'll get a pretty good idea. So avca.org. And also a shameless plug, but I got to do it. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/AVCAVolleyball, and Twitter as well, @AVCAVolleyball.
I think one of the things we talk about a lot on this show, and maybe not on air, but certainly off air, we talk about the merging of a lot of the different entities of this sport, a lot of the different pieces. And we're trying to be one of those pieces. But when we talk about magazines, we talk about players, we talk about juniors, parents, and participation clubs, and we talk about the AVCA and the Hall of Fame and so many different aspects of the sport that need to come together, the beach game, the indoor game, the nationals on the adult side, the USA Volleyball, and all the pieces really needing to understand that if one does well, the whole sport does well.
Right.
So if the AVC is doing well or the beach is doing well, our show will do better and all that. And I think we've experienced that a little bit with the beach kind of fading, where we talk a lot of beach right now, but it's just about, like, where is it, what is it, what's happening? There's a lot of uncertainty.
And Mr. Positivity over here. I talked last week about punching people in the face or something like that, right?
I don't know.
Wow.
I can't be held responsible for what I said last week. But the whole thing with the beach being gone has left a bit of a hole for us. And you can't get information. We have to have Geeter, who happened to be on the ground in CS, to keep
right.
and know what happened.
No, that's a good point. I mean, I was listening in, you know, the whole show, and, you know, as always, but it's an issue where, you know, someone has to step up and say, this is my job. So, I mean, think in small scale first, because if you think too much big picture, nothing gets done.
Right.
It just keeps getting passed around. So in something like that, and you talked a lot about social media before, I mean, someone, I don't know who, I'm not sure how their structure or organization works, but someone's got to step up and say, all right, this tournament's going on, Joe Smith, if there's really a Joe Smith out there, probably.
There's one,
trouble.
Yeah. He used to play for the Timberwolves.
But I'm just just a random someone, random Joe, your job is to post the updates. Your job is to create this Twitter account so you can post updates.
Crowdsourcing.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just, you can try to get other fans involved to help out with that, but ultimately it falls on the individual's organization or someone running the tournament just to simply step up and do it. I mean, it's not rocket science. You know, Twitter, if you can do it under 140 characters, you can post a result. And it's, you know, we had a lot of success doing it. We live tweeted the men's D1 semifinals, and it was awesome. I mean, we had tons of interaction. So people are out there,
yeah,
want to. It doesn't have to be, you know, the NCAA Women's Division I Championship. It can be something, even if it's just one follower, you have to start doing it in order to build up.
Yeah, the great thing about what's going on now is that you can create these micro audiences and you can really feed the group, whereas before there was no way to target your people. There was no way for people to buy into a small event or a particular section of an event or a sport, no matter what it is. Nowadays, you can do that.
And yeah, so, I mean, it's simple. Twitter.com, create a username, create a password, and you're good to go. That simple.
Well, David, we're going to look forward to discussions later about getting the ABCA and its big time dollars behind the show.
well, we'll see.
That's what's going to happen as soon as we're off air. But thank you for the major award, yeah, the Dundee. There's a picture of it. DJ Roche just tweeted it. Have you posted it to our Facebook?
I will.
Okay, we'll have it up there. Our official ABCA Dundee award. That's most excellent. Thank you, David.
Yeah.
Appreciate
no
it.
Problem.
Hey, we're going to wrap up here in a couple minutes, but I want to talk a little bit about Montreux. I want to talk about the women's national team who are in action. We've talked a lot about the men's, as you can hear my boys here in the background, getting a little antsy after a few hours of going to the doctor and then coming here to the show. But the United States finishing fourth at the Montreux Volley Masters event. They eventually lost the bronze medal match to China in four sets. They had a couple of other good matches during this event, and I think some really good performances. The United States went 2-1 in Pool A. They lost to China but beat Germany and Peru, and then moved on to the playoff portion, and Cuba defeated the United States during the half-finals, and then in the finals, the gold medal match was Japan versus Cuba. So the United States had some great performances. I come to mind Jordan Larson, who was on this program a while back, had a good season in Russia. She had a good tournament. Nicole Fawcett came in the last match, played very well from the report I had here. But she's a woman who had come and played, I think, because two seasons ago had played very well at the opposite position, but now with some other changes in staff or changes in players, hasn't seen quite as much time. And so good to see her out there getting some kills. And Kim Glass, I saw her name a lot in the reports. I haven't really gotten on to the women's side of the game yet, as deeply involved with World League, but going to be involved with Grand Prix coming up here. It's roughly the equivalent event, Grand Prix and World League. A little bit different structure. The women go on the road for about 5 weeks, but it's the same kind of world event. So all this now, Pan American Cup and the Montreux Volley Masters, an opportunity for this team to tune up in preparation for Grand Prix.
And what's your feeling on that team? Are they going to be
so much
running?
Talent.
They do have the talent?
God, they have so much talent in the gym. And that's why you see a name like Fawcett reemerge after being gone for a little bit. They have so much talent in that gym. And I think that they have a staff. Of course, Hugh McCutcheon, he's got to be considered the best coach in the United States, having produced the gold medal and the results last season with the women playing very well all year. And so I think that they have the staff. And then you talk about Karch Karai, who by all reports has gone from being a great player, and now he's learning to be a great coach, and of course brings the respect of all the players with his playing career.
Which you always hear that when somebody is the best in their sport, top in their sport, it's hard for them to make that transition to coaching because a lot of the stuff was easy for them. Not that they didn't work hard at being a great player, but it's like they could do things that nobody else could do and probably get frustrated with, why can't you do that like I did? Because I was the greatest of all time.
I think with Karch, he was a guy who worked at it.
Of course.
And he worked at it in his prime, but then he also worked at it as he got older. And he continued to keep himself at that level. And I think that's maybe where he would step out of that thing you're talking about, which I think is very true, and understand the work and the process. And really, it's the process. You always come down to process when we talk with Hugh McCutcheon.
One of my greatest I was on the AVP for 7 years with Geeter. We were in Las Vegas, and Karch was playing with Lambeau this time, and obviously it's towards the end of his career. He's older. Karch had damaged his shoulder, either in the tournament or the week before.
Oh, right, right, and he couldn't hit, really.
They won the tournament, and Karch couldn't swing, and he got every single serve. Couldn't swing, couldn't hit the ball hard. It was all shots, all tournament long, and they won.
Whenever you hear about Karch, especially in Italy, right, I played for Macerata, and our strength coach had been the strength coach when Timmins and Karch were at Il Messaggero playing over there. And so he was familiar with those two guys, and he always talked about the intelligence of Karch and how his ability to learn Italian so quickly and his focus and determination. I think he was pre-med or something at UCLA. I mean, his degree was one of those intensely academic degrees. So I think he's a man that certainly is thoughtful about what's happening, and I by all reports I've heard he's becoming better and better at that assistant coach position.
He's just a better person than all of us is what you're saying.
I'm not going to go that far.
Yeah, okay.
But the talent in the gym, the players are certainly where it's at for that group.
Yeah.
And they have so much talent in there. I mean, you go down with how strong volleyball is at the collegiate level when we talk about a Texas, a Penn State, an Illinois, a Hawaii, Cal. I mean, there's all these teams, USC, that are so good. So you have all this talent funneling right into the national team. And at the men's level, it kind of looks like a pencil, right?
Because
you're real narrow, and then, you come to a point, but there's only so far to go. This is definitely more like the top of a house, where you're coming from very wide, a huge group of people inside that house, and then rising up to the peak of the roof. And so I think that's going to bode well for everyone in that gym. We've talked before about being able to touch the top level of the sport earlier. And the problem for the United States that, it, particularly on the men's side, it's very acute that if you're a good men's player, you really don't know how good volleyball can be on the male side of the game. I think the women's collegiate game is closer to that point. So I think the leap is less. And then you throw in the number of players participating. And I think you really have an opportunity with Hugh McCutcheon's system to really take it to a whole nother level. And I think that's why he took the job, is because of the amount of talent available and the possibilities that are out there for him as a coach to construct a team and construct a philosophy.
I'm excited about, I know the beach season just started here in the States, and the FIBB and the Olympics not till next year, but I'm already excited about all of it. As a fan, I'm just looking forward to how it all plays out, and I just can't wait.
This is the beginning of the Olympic run.
Absolutely.
Hey, we got a caller on the line. It's French fries, which means it must be Eric Sullivan from Texas.
Hello.
Esol, what's happening? You are wrapping up the show for us here.
Nice. I'm still French fries?
You are still French fries on the board. It's all one, but it's good. It's how I know it's you.
I thought I had graduated to a real number when I moved down to Austin.
Apparently it's following.
You can only hope.
Yeah. So, Esol, what's going on?
Not much, man. I just wanted to call in. It's been a little while. Wanted to check in with you guys, see how things are going.
Now, you and I have communicated recently about the voting for the USA Volleyball. This is something that people don't really know about, that the USA Volleyball Board is made up of a variety of different constituencies' representatives. So the men's indoor has a representative. It's actually Reed. I served in that capacity for 4 or 5 years. Sully, or Eric, you served as that person for a number of years. And the women's indoor has a representative, women's outdoor, beach, and vice versa for the men. The women have been asked to vote. And I guess everybody can vote now, but there hasn't been a great response to this group.
So you're correct in saying that there's certain representatives for certain constituents. And I think the criteria is that an individual has played in a internationally sanctioned event, i.e. Olympics or Pan American Games or Uni Games. I'm not sure about Uni Games. World Championships, World Cup, things like that. And by doing that, you have 10 years from that date to be actively involved in the board and in the voting process. And so there's a list, I think, of 100, 120, 130 athletes that have done that, both indoor, I think just indoor for this position. But, yeah, male or female, both get to vote for the female position. And obviously they represent the board as the indoor female athlete. But the turnout hasn't been spectacular. I guess there's a lot of slackers that have played the indoor game, and it is taking a little prodding to get the turnout to be a little higher where we'd like to see it. So,
Yeah, this is one of the interesting things about players, and certainly players as they move beyond their playing career, that they have to make time, I guess, to be responsive to this stuff. I mean, it's hard enough to get them when they're in the gym to vote for some of this stuff and take 5 minutes, much less when you have to send them an email anytime within the next 10 years and hope that they respond. It's a little disappointing to me, and I was surprised that the men could vote for the women's position, because I always thought in years past it had been, you know, the national teams that voted. The players in the national team voted for that position.
Yeah, you know, some of that's changed. I don't know about the vote. Well, a lot of it's changed, actually, with the reincorporation of the board and kind of how it's been restructured. We actually had to look into that because I was unaware as well. I thought it was just the female indoor players that would vote, but everybody's eligible to vote. So, yeah, you know, it's an interesting rule. And I understand the thought process behind it is they want to keep the athletes involved. But the problem with it is that, as you know, when you stop playing, you're kind of at this crossroads in life where you have to get into the real world and, I don't know, maybe start some kind of internet web-based radio show.
Right.
And you're kind of busy starting your family and starting your life, probably where most people are, you know, right out of college. And then you have this 10-year window to be involved, and it's really, really hard to find, personally, at least for me, it was really hard to find the time.
Yeah,
and it's hard to find other people with the time that want to do that in that 10-year span. So it's kind of a bummer of a rule, I think.
Yeah, those that don't know, the structure of the USA Volleyball Board used to be there was a 9-member executive committee that did a lot of the kind of work. And then a lot of issues were taken to the board. The board was 30-plus people from a variety of different constituencies across the world of volleyball. And that board would then meet and approve and discuss a lot of items that the executive committee had talked about. And the USOC decided a few years ago to restructure, you know, after their own restructuring and reduction of board, that in order to get things done, that they would force USA Volleyball to restructure to a smaller board, and now it's gone down to, I believe it's a 16-member with one non-voting member, so you have 15 votes for
Correct.
The board of directors for USA Volleyball and elimination of the executive committee. So you have a board that does a whole bunch of work. And at least I served under the old system and helped craft the new system, and I sat in on the meetings as they were trying to make the new system. And the USOC is big on athlete participation. My whole point was, why? Athletes are playing. You know, this is what they're good at. I've said before, look, they're good at playing and complaining, and I'm all for their input, but they don't have the time. And I think even now we've seen the board has suffered because the athletes just are not present all the time and accounted for, and now you're trying to get someone else to be accounted, to be there and be a representative. You're looking at a few representatives who have already retired, but I served on the board for 2 years after I retired, and it's hard to find a month to show up. It used to be a month. I think now it's reduced, but it's still probably about 2 weeks worth of days in a year to go and be on this board with the demands of being a retired player, trying to craft a new career, and most likely having a family at that point. So I think all those issues are really digging into the possible talent pool that's there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like you said, there's a significant amount of time when you add up the days, and then there's a significant amount of time, even when you're not there in person at the meetings, just trying to stay on top of the issues and being informed. And, you know, there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, not just at the meetings. So it is a pretty tough thing. And when my second child was born, when Kate was born, you know, I pulled out. I just knew that I'd kind of reached this crux of, you know, it's going to be too much. I'm sacrificing some of the stuff that I kind of got out of playing to not have to sacrifice. So,
right.
And somehow I kind of found myself back into some form of still being involved. So I guess I haven't learned to say no yet. So
volleyball's like that. It'll just suck you back in.
It's like, yeah, just when you're trying to get out, they pull you back in.
Tell us about Texas. We've checked in with you quite a few times. You went dark for a while, and we were a little concerned with what was going on, but it seems like now the family would be down there, and you guys are getting ready for summertime and then a new school year for the kids.
Yeah, it's been great. The family moved down about a week and a half ago. We drove the 800 miles, two kids and a dog, and our stuff crammed into the car,
awesome.
Grapes of Wrath style. and made the trek down, and it's been great. You know, the kids have been swimming every day. I was in Houston doing some club camps, working, and so they came to Houston for 3 days and hung out and went. You know, we went down to NASA and did all these cool things, and we just had a blast with it. It's just it's a much different lifestyle, and we've taken advantage of it, and you know, we've enjoyed the city. We went out and watched the bats fly last night. I don't know if you're aware of that, but there's a big bat colony here.
Yeah, right under a bridge, I think it is. Right
And so we're standing on the bridge. We got there a little early, and so, you know, our kids were kind of giving me the, what are we doing? Why is this taking so long? And then a couple bats flew out, and then it is one of the most unbelievable things I've seen. I don't know how many bats are in there, but it took probably 10 minutes, full stream of thousands of bats flying out.
Awesome.
And they just cruise up the lake, and you can kind of see them off in the distance, creating these huge clouds and the whole deal. It was phenomenal.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, I mean that's what you get. You get lots of swimming because it's warm here and bats at night, so it's all good.
That's good. Now you guys are right now in the recruiting part of your season. I know practice usually doesn't start till about August.
Our girls are here in summer school, and so they're doing some stuff on their own and going to school. We were quiet in May. Now we're recruiting again, but not too crazy right now. It'll pick up with AAUs and JOs coming up. And most importantly, we're getting ready for kind of camp season. So we got a whole bunch of camps. We got about 10 days coming up in June and then another 2 weeks in July. That kind of runs our life, a little recruiting and some camps. But, yeah, it's kind of never-ending, but it's good. I get a little more downtime with the family, at least until camps get going. And, I don't know, you know, it's life.
It seems like your boss, Jared Elliott, would be a guy who understands that time with the family is necessary, having three kids of his own, and be pretty flexible with the times when it's possible.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things that was very intriguing about the job. And it's not only myself, but all of our staff have young children. Jared's got the oldest with his daughter and then two young boys. And then my daughter, I think, is the second oldest. And then, yeah, I count them up here. I got I think there's eight kids between our four staff, the three coaches and our special assistant. So, it's kind of cool, you know, everybody's got that on their mind and it's a big part of their life. And so that, everybody's very sensitive to it, including Jarrett. And, so we kind of make the most of it. When we have time, we are with our families, and when we need to work, we're working. So, it's awesome. We actually had a bunch of them over last night in our small apartment, and went out swimming and ate dinner and stuff. And the kids were flying around like maniacs, but, it was a blast.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of backyard barbecues versus restaurant engagements.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. We kind of descended. We have this little community pool, and there's some college-age kids in our community, and on the weekends they get out there and kind of, you know, get that thing going, which is all good. But we kind of took it over for about an hour and a half with just kids flying everywhere. It was sweet.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, Sully, thanks for checking in. We always appreciate talking to you, and we'll look forward to getting down there and bringing the show.
Hey, I got one more shout-out for my guy Rob in Houston. For eating insects. And if Geeter was there, I would have shared the story of Baradine eating insects in Colombia. That's for another time. But my guy Rob was taking care of business last week.
What kind of insects?
I had to give him a little shout out.
What kind of insects is he eating?
It was a worm, and that's all I'm going to say. But it was impressive.
It wasn't from the bottom of a bottle, was it?
I don't know that I can comment because I don't hang out in those kinds of situations anymore. Bad things happen.
That can neither be confirmed nor denied.
Exactly.
Very good. Thanks, Esol. Talk to you again soon.
All right. We'll talk to you guys.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Eric Sullivan is down there in Texas. It's a good life, man. Austin's a good place. A lot of people move from here to Austin. They get tired of paying property taxes and values here, and they pick up stakes and go buy four houses in Austin for the same price as one here.
It's a great music city.
Oh, it's an incredible city. I've got a couple of great friends down there. Just, we love going to visit them, but only in November.
Yes, you don't want to go in the summer months. It's brutal.
It's good once the sun goes down, kind of like the valley here, you know. Once the sun goes away, it's beautiful. 80 degrees and dark is fine. 97 and 105 or something during the day, it's no good.
With humidity.
Oh, with humidity. Ugh.
I know you're busy on your small computer screen,
yes.
But Casey Jennings and Kevin Wong beat Phil and Todd in two.
Ooh.
Second game, 21-12.
Ooh, that does not sound good.
No, so I wonder if that was Phil's ankle or if Casey and Kevin were just dominating.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to believe that's the ankle. Love, you know, Casey and Kevin, but that's that 12. You hang a 12 on those guys, that's a problem. That's a physical issue. Well, good update. Those you get in the podcast, you'll already know the results by this point. Hey, been another fun show. We talked to Brittany Hochevar. She was great. Had some good quotable quotes going. Chris Geeter McGee was checking in. Had Reed Pretty, the boss, stop by and give us the full lowdown on World League in Brazil. He's actually fresh off the plane, which I didn't know initially. Straight from the airport to this show. That's what we're giving you.
We're important.
That's what we're giving you. Oh, he's grabbing the mic again here. Hang on. Yes, Mr. Pretty.
I was just going to ask if I could take a shower in your sink.
Hey, man, it's our studio. Do whatever you want.
Okay.
And I had David Portney from AVCA stop by and award us our Dundee. Get a picture of that up on Facebook. Is that me with the briefcase there? I'm looking kind of tall and skinny.
That's what the message board is asking, if that's you in your business attire.
I look good. I got the big hair helmet going. No problem. Yeah, I'll take that. He's kind of chesty, too. Looks like I've been doing some bench.
He's buff a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take that. I'm down with that. Hey, we appreciate you being here listening each week. Don't forget to get us on iTunes. Interact with us, thenetlive@gmail.com. Send us some email through the week. Facebook.com/thenetlive. We'll endeavor to get some more questions up there for you. We're still looking for Dave Williams. We thought he was coming this week, and then he kind of disappeared. We still want to know USAV's plans and how they figure into the beach scene. We talked about Corona Light Wide Open this week. We talked about the NVL a couple of weeks back. USAV is the other player in there with IMG, the global sports powerhouse. I'm wondering how that whole thing's going to play out. We had James Lights quite a while back, so we're still looking for Dave Williams and to find out what's happening there. The first couple of events push back. We will keep working on that. Also going to have a couple of writers from Volleyball Magazine in here to talk about some of the stuff they've been doing. Lots more to come here on the show. It's going to be a hot summer. I'm headed to Chicago this week to hang out with the national team. If you're in the Chicago area, USA Poland, it's going to be sick.
It's going to be great. Hopefully sold out, and we're used to being the away team, so it's no problem. Not afraid.
Dude, it's going to be good. Sears Center in the Hoffman Estates. Tickets still available. The following week going to be Tulsa, Oklahoma against world number one Brazil. That's a chance to come out and see some incredible volleyball. Two of the best teams in the world duking it out. And then right here, Long Beach State University, the Pyramid, hosting July 1-2. So this is three straight weeks of big-time volleyball in the United States. If you don't live nearby, travel. It's worth it, man. You don't get to see these guys too often. July 1-2, the Pyramid at Long Beach, USA, Puerto Rico.
And get your tickets now because Garhoff is buying them all up.
Our guy Matt Garhoff, he's bought 80, I think.
That was
so
smart. He's like going for the group rate.
Yeah.
Hey, good on him.
He's got a lot of friends. He's using Facebook. Give them away. Hey, thanks to all the people that have supported this show in the past and current, Zamps, AVCA, USAV, Mikasa. Had a lot of different people behind the show. We're going to keep talking to folks and get them on here. Make this a gathering place. Spread the word. It's The Net Live. I'm Barney. He's DJ Roche. And the boss, Reed Pretty. Come see him play this weekend in Chicago. Go check it out. We'll talk to you again next Monday. Later.